Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of the Sliwa Show. Mario making it happen. LA, always appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock tonight. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. What's going on, Kirk? How you doing?
I'm doing good. What's up, Alan Sliwa? How we doing on this Wednesday night, my brother?
All right, so this is kind of, this is different. This is new. Let me tell you what's new. I don't know, you know, what you're watching on TV. I know you're set up. You got the home. The family's all there. You're set up in the room. But this is what I have on ESPN right now. I'm watching live sports. Do you know what tonight is?
What is tonight?
Tonight is the start of this MLS is back tournament. Oh, Orlando, wow. And Miami in this Orlando bubble, they're green lighted. They're going. And I just look, I point that out, Kirk, because I'm not known to be a huge soccer enthusiast. I respect the sport. It's obviously probably the most popular sport in the world, you know, obviously in Europe and other parts of South America, other parts of the those areas, but really around the world, how popular soccer is. Kirk, this is big news that there's a sport on right now in the States, in Orlando, that's part of a bubble. They at least got it started. Let's see right. What happens. I'm sure there's a lot of sports watching this right now. A lot of the Major League Baseball, NBA, everybody's curious to see since they're the first one to go.
Yeah, I mean, that is huge news. Live sports, that's what we want. We want live sports, nothing replayed. And look, we've been getting by watching all the classics, right? We watched all the Laker championships, Kobe's last game, Shaq's last game.
Watched every game seven times.
Yeah, we watched everything, right? We know how everything ends, right? But we want something live, right? There's nothing like live sports. There is no reality TV show, like it, because we go in with our own headlines or how we think it will go or how it should go. But yet when you watch it and watch it play out live and the ending is probably not how you predict it, it's what makes sports so special. So to see MLS getting it started, getting it cracking already, I love that, because right now, you know, there's still so much unknown that we have ongoing with the other professional sports that at least we have one that's kind of starting, getting things going.
And tournament started.
Giving us the confidence, man. Giving us the confidence that we can play. Sports can be played right now.
By the way, this is kind of similar. Dodgers have that that scrimmage that they do, just, you know, obviously within their own team. They'll do that tonight. I think that first pitch is going to be in about the next 10 minutes or so. Maybe it's 6:50, something along those lines. But this is Lakers that will be in Orlando starting tomorrow. If you go on Twitter right now, you'll see teams that are arriving. You'll see teams opening up their food. We'll talk about food later. You know, Kirk, we always going to get into food.
Always. You know that.
And I know you're very passionate about the food that is being presented so far in Orlando with the NBA. So we'll do that. But just seeing these types of images on Twitter or on TV, that does make you kind of take a step back and say, wait a minute here. Maybe we are going to get a chance to get sports back over these next, you know, 30 days or so. And I know there's no guarantee that we're going to crown a champion. There's no guarantee. I mean, already the Dallas team, we talked about this a little bit yesterday for MLS. They're already pulled out because I think they had 10 players, or maybe it was 9 players and a staff member. They just couldn't do it. And they're going to quarantine for a couple of weeks. They won't be able to, you know, be ready for this tournament that's in such a small window. But it's great. I see right now, tomorrow, New York City, Philadelphia, Seattle, San Jose, Toronto, D.C. So whether you're an MLS fan or you're not, the fact that there's MLS on, you got to feel good about that. So anyways, just wanted to start off the show with that as I have this on TV right now. Okay, Kirk, do you know what today is? Today's the anniversary of something. 10 years ago today.
The anniversary of the decision.
Bro, still polarizing, huh?
It's still polarizing. The decision.
Ten years ago today, probably right around this time, we're all sitting around our TVs, and here's LeBron James. Even back then, you know, if not the most popular athlete in the world on a very short list. And here's LeBron. This is his first chance in free agency. You know, obviously a part of the Cleveland Cavaliers, grew up in Akron, Ohio. Everybody has their eyes on LeBron James, and everybody, I don't know what you, we'll get into what you expected first, but just the lead up to his free agency was as big, it almost felt like a presidential race or something. You know what I mean? Like, there was just so much hype leading up to LeBron's decision of whether he was going to stay in Cleveland or he was going to look at, you know, obviously another team or another squad. And then there's this special that's being put on national television where LeBron James is going to decide what he's going to do. And it's a trip to think that 10 years has gone by since the decision, right?
Yeah.
10 years has gone by since he decided to go to Miami. Everybody hates him, loses in his first year in Miami, then comes back and wins two championships with Bosch and Dwayne Wade, then loses against the Spurs, finds a way to get back to Cleveland, gets them a championship, and now here he is playing for the Los Angeles Lakers, number one team in the Western Conference, and a chance to win number 17 for the Lakers this upcoming season. What a freaking crazy ride for LeBron James, Kirk.
Yeah, I think you always, there's moments in time, Alan, that you always remember where you were.
Yeah.
Right? Always remember where you were. For me, a lot of people in Los Angeles probably don't know this, but I remember where I was in 1988. All right. I was 6 years old and I was with my dad. And I grew up in the Bay Area as a
A's,
Giants
Dodgers.
And A's. Yeah, I'm an A's and Giants fan growing up. I watched both. I love both teams, man. I had guys on both squads. But in 88, you know, one of the guys who I watched was Dennis Eckersley. Great closer, Hall of Famer.
The man.
And he was the man, and he was unhittable. Mm-hmm. When he came into the game, you might as well close the curtains because the game's going to be over. It's done. And that night, I remember sitting with my dad and literally watching, you know, Kirk Gibson. He had a cool first name, by the way. So, but Kirk Gibson hit a home run that night.
How about you watch him? How about you watch him? First of all, I don't even think he was in the I don't even think he was in the dugout for most of the game.
No, I think he was. Yeah, he was injured. I mean, watched him hobble up.
Right, like, and then come up to the plate. Yep, literally limping up there. You're like,
yeah,
what's going
using
on
the bat as a crutch almost.
What's this guy doing?
Yeah, using the bat as a crutch, and I just remember just Dennis Eckersley throwing that pitch, and it was low, and it wasn't like it was like out in front of the plate. It was low, and he just. He just golfed that thing.
You know when a pitcher, by the way, Kirk, you know when a pitcher, when he, like Eckersley was such the man at the time where he's just accustomed to things going his way, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
How about right when it's hit, how quick he looks out. Now he's sizing it up, right? Like, oh, no, don't tell me this just happened. You know, yeah. He's almost sizing up like the wall and
correct.
The ball. You know what I mean? But keep going with your point.
No, but I'm literally a young 6 year old man, about six and a half, and I just remember just being in tears, just crying. Mm-hmm. Literally. I knew where I was. I'm sitting down with my dad and we're watching the game and I'm in tears. Like, this isn't supposed to happen. And I knew that at a young age, and I can look at my father's reaction and he was saying the same thing. So I was just thinking about kind of there are certain things or moments in time where you think back to where you were. And in 2010, Alan, I was thinking back to where I was being with my buddies. And we're, you know, I'm getting ready for, you know, year number six in the National Football League for myself. I'm transitioning to a new team. I was traded earlier that offseason from the Oakland Raiders to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I had a lot on my mind, right? A lot on my plate. And I was just spending a little bit of time with my friends before it was time to head over to Jacksonville. And I remember just, where's LeBron going to go? Where is LeBron going to go?
What do you think was going to happen? What do you think was going to happen?
Wow. I honestly.
Because I remember exactly what I thought.
You did? You
know, yeah.
Honestly, I couldn't lean anywhere. I had no idea. I literally did not know. I mean, think about it. I'll put it like this. Miami was the furthest thing out of my mind. I didn't even think it was Miami at all. But
you know who was calling it at that time that said this was, I think, a couple weeks prior. Ireland. I remember John telling Steve, saying something to the effect like, I think he's going to Miami, that he had somebody that he knew that was a very reliable source that was kind of, you know, letting John know, I think he's going to end up in Miami. And there were a few people, I think, making mention of it, but nobody, everybody's like, that's not happening, right? Like, right. Okay, let me tell you what I thought, okay? Let's actually do this. We're coming up to a commercial break right now. We're talking about LeBron James. 10 years ago today, LeBron made the decision. We're having that conversation. There was definitely the way I felt when that decision happened to how I view what LeBron has done since then has been a drastic difference. So we'll talk about that coming up next. If you want to be a part of the show, 877-710-ESPN. Stay right here. Sliwa Show, Alan Sliwa, Kirk Morrison, 710 ESPN. All right, appreciate you guys tuning in. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison. So, Kirk, just to go on that conversation we're having, 10 years ago today, LeBron James makes his decision. So, I remember I had just been working at the station. Wait, 2010, that means Lakers just won their championship against Boston. Okay, so I thought 200% this dude's staying in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was so sold that if he's going to do all of this, it's because he's going to say, because it was such an unpopular thing to do to leave, right? Like, when I say unpopular, I'm only talking about from a selfish perspective. Fans, we always look at things from a selfish perspective, right? We're not paying attention to how the player feels. We're typically just, okay, well, what's in the best interest of our team, or what do I want this player to do? And it's kind of funny with LeBron. You know, LeBron is such an easy player. Like, his actual game, what he does on the basketball floor, how can you knock his game? You know what I mean? Like, he's unselfish. He likes passing the ball. He's the guy that tries to make the right play. He grabs rebounds. He gets assists. He gets points. He blocks shots. Like, I don't know what more you can ask from a player. And he was carrying the Cleveland Cavaliers all those years that he was there. Right. So selfishly on my end, it was like impossible. He's going to leave. Plus, you know, if this guy was going to win a championship, you wanted to see him do it in his hometown. So I was so sold that that's what he was going to do. That's the decision that he was going to make. What did you say? You don't remember what you thought he was going to do?
I didn't remember what I thought he was going to do. I remember in the New York Knicks, he had a meeting with them. I'm just trying to think of all the teams he had meetings with back then. But I just, like I said, Miami was the furthest team that I think that he would go to. I just didn't see Miami. They didn't really have that history as well.
The finances yeah. too, right?
And then, yeah,
if they were to do it, that means, well, Wade's not going to take that much. Come on, Bosch isn't going to take that.
Bosch,
LeBron's
yeah.
not going to take $16 million a year or whatever.
People forget
it was,
these
right?
guys waited 7 years for this, though. Right. This was a time where they waited 7 years to finally hit free agency. OK, finally to say, I get to go where I want to go. They had already had those max deals already. Now they're ready to get that big max. And then all of a sudden they're told, if I want to make this thing work, what do I have to do? I got to take less to form the big three. But just thinking about where I was at, though, Sleep, I'm just sitting there with my buddies. We're watching it. And the whole time, I'm marveling the whole time. Mm. I am just in awe, Sliwa, in awe.
The attention it was getting?
Just the attention. People don't even remember that Twitter was actually still in its infancy stages at this time. Okay? I was one of the first people who was on Twitter, one of the first athletes on Twitter. I remember.
I think you were one of the first investors, and you're just not telling us
no,
either.
No. I was one of the first athletes. I remember I was at an event, and a buddy of mine, I don't want to do name drops, so I don't want people to think that, but I was at an event. Buddy said, yeah, man, you got to get on Twitter. And I'm like, Twitter? What is that? And he was just telling me about the concept. I was like, no way. Why do I want to tell people what I'm doing? Or asking, he's like, man, I'm telling you, it's going to be the wave of the future. I'm just telling you. So I had got on. I was one of the first couple NFL athletes to be on Twitter. And literally when I jumped on Twitter, I was like, oh, wow, this is huge. And this is great. But at the same time, though, Alan, Twitter was just starting. So we were just starting to get the news. We were just starting to get our updates, right? Of where is LeBron going to go? And everybody just knew about this decision. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, I'm literally about to watch an hour-long special about where a guy is going to play basketball next year.
Oh, right?
Not
man.
A press conference, but it was like the hour-long special, and it mm-hmm. talked about the boy from Akron and what all went into this. I mean, like, think about
presented
it.
By State
presented by... Presented... Oh, my... Think about it. They lollygagged, right? They
no question about it. They said... By the way, I think they said 5 o'clock was going to be the decision. It was like 5:53. I'm like, we don't got a word yet.
We sat there and we watched, and look, and the thing is, there was no breaking news right before, mm-hmm. nothing. It just stayed cool. It stayed underneath the hat, and I just remember him walking out there, and I was still kind of scratching my head. Why Jim Gray? First of all, of all people, like, why Jim Gray?
Maybe, like, you know, it could have easily been, it could have easily been,
LeBron,
maybe
it's your
like
floor. LeBron, it's your floor. Go out there, LeBron. Tell us what you're going to do, LeBron. LeBron, it's your floor.
That's Jim Gray, too. That's that Jim Gray right Gray. There.
Well, okay, tell us about it, LeBron. You struggled in Cleveland, so why you want to leave? Like, that's Jim Gray. He'll throw a backhanded compliment at you real quick.
We got this hour lead up. Not even including the months prior. Remember when he was in the postseason all the conversation? What's he going to do after? And then the moment he's eliminated, you know, they lost to Boston.
That's Boston. What I was listening to the podcast, the mm-hmm. All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson.
Steven Jackson, yep.
And they, you know, they had Kevin Garnett on. They had Paul Pierce on, and you know, just thinking back.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about it like the Boston Celtics then are basically saying that we started this movement. We started the LeBron mm-hmm. movement thing because they beat LeBron into a point where he's like, I got to go. I can't stay in Cleveland anymore. So they take credit.
But by the way, they could take credit. Let me kind of stick up for LeBron on that one. You're talking about 3 Hall of Famers that had to freaking team up to beat LeBron, right? Like, just think about that for a second, because that's the reality. If LeBron had any one of those 3 players with him, he probably wins a championship, or you know, the circumstances are a lot different. I also hear this too. We'll use your team up in the Bay, right? You talk about the Golden State Warriors.
Yes.
And I know this isn't apples to apples. I wanted LeBron to stay in Cleveland. This is from a personal level. I wanted him, if he's going to get a chip, do it in Cleveland, because look, it was a cool story. I mean, that's the bottom line. He's from there.
Right.
I mean, he turned around that franchise, you know, obviously overnight. You had kind of something similar playing out with KD in Oklahoma City, right? Mm-hmm. When I say that, what I'm referring to is if KD was going to get a chip, it would have been really cool if KD got one in Oklahoma City, where he was drafted with Russell Westbrook, just the way he rolled up his sleeves for all those years. I hated that he went to a team like the Golden State Warriors, who had already won a championship, already had big-time players. I know it's not apples to apples, but as a fan, you're rooting for that underdog. I thought LeBron was the underdog. I thought KD was the underdog. And I think probably both of those guys reached the point. It's like, I'm trying to give myself the best chance to win. It's not going to happen where I'm at right now.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, but it was about championships. LeBron kind of started it, right? There was that era of basketball between 2010 and 2020, right? 2010 and 2020 is an era of basketball where I thought the narrative changed. Instead of about who's the baddest dude on the planet, it was about about championships. How were you going to get your championship? That's what it turned out to. And I don't know if we pushed that narrative a lot anymore now. I think because the NBA has gotten so much younger, right? And I don't know if we put it on James Harden and Russell Westbrook like that, but LeBron James in 2010, that was his mindset. I got to win a championship. Mm-hmm. I got to win a chip. And where I'm at right now, it's just not going to happen. And so when those words came out of his mouth, right, I'm taking my talents to South Beach.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I remember saying, wow. Okay.
Oh, shocking.
It was shocking.
Shocking.
It was, and like I said, and for me, like you mentioned, I was telling you, I was going to the state of Florida. I was playing for Jacksonville Jaguars. Mm-hmm. State of Florida, I mean, my teammates with the Jaguars were big time, like, Miami Heat fans. They weren't Orlando Magic fans. They were Heat fans. All my guys from Florida, they were Heat fans. you know, because they were Heat friends from Dwayne Wade and Shaq, sure, and they grew mm-hmm. up there. And so now they got LeBron James. I mean, number six jerseys were flying off me all across the locker room, man. And I'm like, wow.
But well, we could taste what that was, because he came to the Lakers, right? Like, think about the moment he made that decision to come to the Lakers. Like, how incredible was that? And it still is today. But keep going on the Miami thing.
It is, and we could talk about that too a little bit. It was less climactic, right? The climactic of him coming to L.A. was, here's a press release, and remember, we didn't hear from LeBron for about a month.
Yeah, he learned a little bit on that one.
We didn't hear from him for about a month. Conference. It was like, LeBron's on the Lakers. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah, here's a jersey, what it's going to look like. But like, no, we want to see him in the jersey. We want to see the press conference. And we had to wait like a whole summer, it felt like, before he talked. But anyway, I knew where I was at when LeBron made the decision. I was so shocked. But at the same time, I kept telling you, I just thought, like, some people were upset about how he did it. Like, why do it this way? And no one ever talks about this, Alan. The dude gave $2 million to the Boys and Girls Club.
By the way,
like,
Kirk,
think about it. I'm going to put on a special, and I'm going to get $2 million because all of these networks want to have this show.
Sure.
And I'm going to give all the money
and
to the YMCA.
And consumers want it. And consumers
yes.
want it.
And here, people wanted it. It was, to me, it was brilliant. And you know why? Because I don't think, I don't know. Maybe in my lifetime, I don't know, Alan, I have never seen a bigger decision in all of sports. That was the biggest decision I think that I will ever see. That's how powerful that decision was
Look what
day
changed.
In 2010.
Kirk, look what changed, too, because, by the way, first of all, I genuinely don't believe, and we were having this conversation, I think, a week ago, Ireland and I told John, I said, I really don't believe he thought, like, I don't think he had any bad intentions or, hey, I'm here to screw Cleveland. Like, I really don't think any of that even popped in his mind. I know he knew that he was going to hurt, you know, this fan base that obviously wanted him to stay there as the chosen one, right? But at the same time, I don't think he had any, you know, malice or anything like that at all. But what's crazy about that decision was LeBron James went from, you know, one of the most loved players in the league to he was the villain. He was evil, right? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy went to Miami. And I was rooting against the Miami Heat. I mean, I was rooting for the Dallas Mavericks to beat them. I was rooting for the San Antonio Spurs to beat them. And here's the reality of it. You know, you mentioned this. I know we talked a little bit about this when we were prepping. You said that you loved the move, right? Because it was so different. Now he's got chances to win championships. He's taking control of his career. He's not allowing a team or the NBA to dictate these decisions. So that kind of self-empowerment for players, I'm sure a lot of players looked at LeBron after and said, okay, we know we have this type of power as well. Not that type of power, but you know what I mean. But the one thing I'll take away from it, must watch TV. You know what I mean? So like, you didn't have to like LeBron. You didn't have to like the Miami Heat. But Kirk, I was watching games. I mean, if there's a nationally televised game and it was the Miami Heat, that was some incredible basketball for those few years.
Alan, were you a big Saved by the Bell fan?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was too. Watch Saved by the Bell. All those people out there listening, hope you watch Saved by the Bell. I actually still have a t-shirt, Bayside High, Tigers. Loved it.
All right, give me some of the names again. So we know Zach, we know Slater.
Yeah, Zach, Slater,
Kelly,
Screech,
was it Kelly
Lisa, Jesse.
Lisa, Jesse.
Mr. Belding,
oh,
Max.
Yeah, the whole crew. Yeah,
oh, yeah. I got everybody.
He knows them all. He knows them all.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when that series shifted, right, they all went to college, and it was called Saved by the Bell, the college years.
I remember that. Played a lot of volleyball.
Yeah, a lot. And that's what I call LeBron in Miami. It was LeBron the college years. LeBron didn't get a chance to go to college. He came straight out of high school. And so his introductory years, I call them in Cleveland, were him just getting his feet together, right? Getting his feet underneath him, I should say. Learning how to play the NBA game. And he was very exceptional at doing that. But at the same time, I don't think that his strive for a championship was fun. I don't think being in Cleveland was fun. He felt the burden. He felt the pressure. And he said, you know what? He entered the portal. Put in the college term, right? He entered the portal. He said, I want to go somewhere else and do this college thing. He goes to Miami for 4 years. I call LeBron James the college years. And you knew it from the introductory press conference how much fun it was going to be, Alan, right? What is the famous line from the introductory press conference of the Miami Heat?
Not two. Not three.
One.
How
did
he get up to it? Got to
six. I mean, think about it. They had a pep rally for the LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and D-Wade teaming up.
And we
they
were
didn't
all
have
watching.
The entire team.
And we were all
it
watching
was just
it.
Those three, and we all watched. Like, think about that. Okay, it's like if the Lakers had a pep rally for Anthony Davis at Staples Center and everybody showed up and it was like LeBron and Anthony Davis there. We're like no, like LeBron learned. Like, you know,
oh, no, he definitely learned. Yeah, he definitely
but
learned.
But different organizations handle things differently. And Miami, even though they won a championship before, it was different now they had LeBron. Because now they went from being just an average NBA team that had a championship in a previous time,
right,
to now being the main team, to now being the coolest team in the NBA. They were the Heatles, for that's what people called them, because they were the cool kids. They were the Heatles. I wasn't a Miami Heat fan, but oh boy, I watched it.
I was watching. And I was definitely watching.
I was actually, like I told you, I was with the Jaguars that year, and I actually went to that game. Was that game 6 or game 5, I believe, that they
against
lost to Dallas?
Dallas?
Yeah, I was at game the elimination
six.
Game. Game 6.
Game 6 in Miami.
I was there, Alan. And that's another moment I won't forget where I was at, right?
No
I'm
question
there.
About it. Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Kidd,
Sean
Marion.
No. We're not even talking about the game. I'm talking about when the game was over. Club Live in Miami. Oh, ooh, man. Oh, my God.
The Kirk Morrison life.
I'm talking about
Kirk
we
Morrison
had Live,
life.
And I'm with one of my guys played in
by
the
way,
NBA.
Did you hear my response? My response, I was talking about Jason Terry, and I was getting ready to talk about the players. You're like, yeah, Alan, we're definitely on two different pages. Definitely not worried about
the
game.
I was with my guy that night. He hooked me up with some tickets, and then after the game, he was on the team. So after
he was on
game,
Miami or Dallas?
Dallas.
Okay.
So after it was over, we
oh,
all
you
met
were
up
with Dallas.
And
oh,
we
that's
went.
The Mark Cuban. That's right. This is with Cuban going.
I have pictures with the championship hat on that I have buried. I don't want people to see because
put it
my
up on
eye,
Twitter. Put it up
I took,
on Twitter.
I took my glasses
Kirk
off.
Morrison's coming out with some. I took my glasses off.
I got the championship hat on, partying with Cuban and.
As if you like just, were born and raised in Dallas and you've been a lifelong Mavs fan.
It was a night I will never forget because
I'm
that
sure
was supposed
won't.
To be a night for the Miami Heat in terms of a couple days later, right? They're supposed to win the championship.
Supposed
Miami
to force
was,
game seven.
But it was like watching Mark Cuban come down the stairs. So it's these, what do they call those stairs? Not elevator stairs, but it's, you know, the dual stairs that go on like each side. You remember like from Scarface? Like when you go
into
a room
exactly
and they have like the dual
yep.
staircase.
Yep.
And so they have a dual staircase as you walk down to the dance floor. And I remember like the music stopped and then all of a sudden, like I believe the We Are the Champions came on.
Can you imagine Cuban's swagger and confidence right there at that moment?
But you got to understand, like, it was so many people that all you could see was the top of the Larry O'Brien. You couldn't even see who was carrying it.
Damn.
Because it was so many people, camera phones out, flashing, everything. And he just walks all the way down. He gets onto the stage where the DJ usually sets up. He raises that trophy in the air, and it was just the place went bananas. Because this was the first time I had ever seen an owner like in the club with his team though. Like think about that, like in his team, like with his team. Like, it was...
I wonder if back in the days, you know, Dr. Jerry Buss.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and plus, look, Dr. Jerry Buss not only was just when he took over the Lakers, it was instant success,
correct?
Right? And it was the Los Angeles Lakers.
So it was like
if
Dr. Buss was like this, walking into the Forum Club after the game with the Larry O'Brien in his hand and a cigar. And
it's not like Dr. Buss. Dr. Buss did it 10 times, all right? Dr. Buss was like, finally you got one? All right, Kirk, we got to go to break. Let me set this one up real quick. So there's been a lot of conversation about the food in Orlando. And I know you're very, very passionate when it comes to some of these subjects. I think it's way blown out of proportion. We'll talk about it coming up next. Stay right here. Sleeva Show, Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison on 710 ESPN. Some live sports going on right now. Let's stay on the Orlando topic for a quick second. So MLS is back tournament, which might be the worst name I've ever heard of, Kirk. Every time I read that, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Just name it. You don't have to name it MLS is back tournament. But 1-1 Orlando-Miami right now. This is part of the Orlando bubble. Why am I giving you that score? I'm only giving you that score because it's live. Like, right. You remember, Kirk, back in the day, and I know it sounds like pre-COVID was 5 years ago or something, but yeah. Literally ESPN on the right side of their screen, what does it say? Do you have the game on or no?
Yes, I do.
What does it say on the top right hand of the screen?
Live, L-I-V-E. Live.
Bro, I genuinely think it says that because they need to make sure people understand you're not used to live sports anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that that's part of it is like just to remind people like, yeah, the tournament started. Here we go. This is a live tournament. So Lakers get to Orlando tomorrow. And we've seen some photos circulated. The conversation about Orlando, what it's going to be like, all we've heard so far is these are top-notch resorts. $150 million was spent to put this, you know, turn or this restart of the season in this Orlando bubble. It costs $150 million to do it. And then Troy Daniels, actually a former Laker, puts up a photo of his dinner, and it became one of the most popular photos, I think, on Twitter yesterday. What was your thought when you first saw that? Were you like, what went through your mind? Because in my head, I was like, okay, yes, it's a sorry dinner, but everything's going to be fine. You guys just arrived. Give it a second. Give this thing a little bit of time. It's not like the NBA is not going to take care of these players. They'll get their lobster in the morning if that's what they want. You know, I don't have any concern that the NBA is not going to be eating good. What did you think yesterday? You think this is blown out of proportion? Or if you were an athlete there and you got that dish, what would you be thinking?
It just depends. First of all, yes, I'm going to bring it up. It's sort of like the elephant in the room. But you saw that meal from Troy Daniels, and the first thing that you think of is the Fire Festival, right?
No way you thought the Fire Festival when you saw that.
Oh, that was
no
a meme. He's right.
No, I thought of the Fire Festival.
Okay, this is what I'm looking at here. I see some watermelon.
Right here. You see, some watermelon? Bread.
Okay, I see yep. a, I see a
no,
nice
you don't
green
see bread.
Salad.
You see a roll. That's I not bread, roll. Alan. Let's clarify that. Bread is just like if I say I'm getting a loaf of bread, right, we're yep. thinking about a square piece. That is a dinner roll. So let's make sure we
butter,
clarify.
Right? Like there's I think
you got
to the right,
clarify
there's some
that.
Butter.
See, I like to eat. So you can't tell they've got bread for you. No, they have rolls. It's a difference.
But okay.
All right, go ahead.
Let's keep going down, all right? So yep. We got some trail mix. All right, who can't use a good trail mix, right? Some banana yeah. chips in there, some dried fruit. We got Stacy's pita chips.
Yep. A small bag. Fantastic. Though. Small bag, not big bag. Small bag.
And then we got a green salad that looks like a good-sized salad with a lot of greens in it. And then a lot of sides here. We got a lot
it is
of sides.
It is a side salad.
I'm assuming the sides everywhere else, probably some cheese, some dressing. You throw
and
that
maybe
on the
like
salad.
A cup of soup. So he maybe could be on a diet. I don't know. But it looked real Fire Festival-ish to me as I look at this. It actually, you know what it reminds me of?
I know what it reminds me of.
It reminds me of like the meal that you get in economy on a long flight.
On a plane, 100%. That's what I was going to say.
It looks like plain food. It does. It really does. And the way that it's kind of presented, and I've seen the memes out there right now, people joking of what they're eating in Orlando, and it brought me, again, Alan, story time. Here we go. Kirk Morrison.
Did you see, by the way, did you see Joe Ingles? Do you see Joe Ingles?
Go, I didn't go look see up Joe Ingles.
Twitter. Go look up his Twitter.
Okay.
Tell your story, but look up his Twitter.
So, I'm with the Oakland Raiders. My, I think it was my second camp, first camp. No, it was first camp. And every day, Alan, you have this setup of food, okay? Because remember, you're not living out of your refrigerator anymore. Mm-hmm. You're living at these ballrooms and what they have to eat. So you kind of see the same thing every single day. And I know some people are like,
buffet style.
Yeah, buffet style. Yeah. You know, people are like, oh my God, but it's free food and they should be happy and enjoy it. Look, trust me, I was a professional player. I understand what y'all saying out there, people. Yes, But honestly, eating the same thing every single day, after a while, you kind of get bored, right? And people out there, you may just want to go out and just go grab a steak somewhere, right? Or you just, I just want an In-N-Out hamburger tonight. There's all the things that some of these guys may want to do. So I understand some of the frustration that you may get, especially if you're eating the same thing for 3 months, okay, 2 months, sometimes even a week. And I go back to when I was in training camp, Alan, when there was like, we used to have what they call runners. A runner was somebody you paid to go grab the food, because it would be like, hey, we just had a hard week-long practice, and man, I don't know if I want to eat the hotel food.
Right.
And somebody like, hey, I got a runner going to Popeye's Chicken. Give me your order. Or, hey, I got a runner going to In-N-Out. Give me your order. And so what you would do is everybody had their order. They all write it down. And we would, you know, tip the runner, you know, pretty. Because the runner usually is a guy who's an intern. You know, probably not making a lot of money. Just intern, summer little thing. And so, look, he was more than happy to do
this
it.
This is
he
part of his job.
Yeah, it was part of his job. He loved it. But it was always funny the night that, you know, we would do that, because you would kind of just see the dining hall would be empty. Like, not a lot of people were there. And I was like, oh,
everybody's waiting for some fast food.
Everybody know that. So, hey, we was all eating out. We were going to eat out tonight.
And how big was that runner from their order? Like, how many football players, God knows how much you guys were taken down. But, like, think about, I could just only imagine this kid going through the drive-thru. What'd you say? What'd you say that one of the restaurants?
I think we had a Popeyes run.
Let's use Popeyes for a second.
Yeah.
Is he like how many players is he buying for? Not buying for, but how many players is he ordering for, you think?
It depends. It could be about 20. It just depends, because there are some guys who won't do it. There's some guys like, look, 20
football players in the National Football League. I mean, that order's got to be long.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you learn, right? And you learn to call ahead, okay? Because I've learned by default. Because I was with the young rookie, and I had to do it once before rookie duties. Because after training camp, there is no interns, and nobody's going to run go get it. So I had to do it as a rookie, to a point where I had the great Warren Sapp, who was my teammate, Alan, would always be difficult, right? Because he always wanted apple pies from Popeyes, but no cinnamon. You know how hard that is, Alan? To go find an apple pie with no cinnamon.
Unbelievable.
But that's what he wanted. And I remember I didn't check the order fully, and they gave me all apple pies. They all had cinnamon. I remember he looked at it and chucked it at me. What am I supposed to do with this? I was like, it should be the number. Look for it. And I literally went through that bag, and there was not one cinnamon. I mean, there was none without cinnamon. And he let me have it that day. I was the rookie. You know, I'm talking to a Hall of Famer. What am I supposed to do?
So what would you? So what would you do then?
That never happened again. It never happened again.
What would you do then if you're in this bubble? You can't go anywhere, and you don't like the food. You don't have to answer yet. Let's go to commercial break real quick. I want to get your thoughts on that, because I know you had mentioned something to me. I want to make sure you mentioned to the audience. We are trying to keep, obviously, everybody in this bubble. There's a reason. The NBA, if they're going to make this thing work, every team and every player has got to go by the rules, because even if you go by the rules, there's no guarantee that that virus is not going to get in the bubble, and COVID-19 – couldn't potentially impact the game even more than it already has. So we come back, we'll talk about that. Plus, another thing I got to get into, did you see what the Baltimore Ravens announced earlier today? It's something about fans going to games. We'll get a chance to talk about that. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show with Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison on 710 ESPN. All right, so we're talking about food. What a shocker, what a surprise. Okay, Kirk, what's your concern with if the food's not up to par? I think this whole thing's been blown out of proportion. I don't know if you got to see Joe Ingles' tweet, Joe Ingles' comedy, what he put out too. So take a look at that when you get a second, Kirk.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing's been blown out of proportion. I don't have any concern that these guys aren't going to eat good. But what is one of your concerns if the food is not up to par with what the players are looking for?
Well, I think everybody has different tastes, right? We all go to the same buffet, but yet we eat differently, okay? And that's kind of what this is in Orlando. You got a lot of guys who are going to, you know, figure out, hey, what I'm going to eat sometimes. And look, there's some guys who say, you know what? I like to eat a meal from, you know, my local fast food chain or my local mom and pop, or I may want a little soul food here and there, you know what I mean? Or some Korean food, right? You know, or you may say, I want some Greek tonight, right? There's a lot of differences
starving
that guys
right
can want.
Starving, you know? Right now as you give me more of that.
But it's a reality, right? That these players are going to have to think about that over this period of time. I told you, a friend of mine who you know is a strength coach for one of the teams down there in the bubble, and just kind of watching his feed and his social media feed, and having to, you know, tell his wife and kids, hey, I'll be back. I'll be gone over here. You know what I mean? Like, there are some things that I think the outside world or fans don't understand, the sacrifice of some of these players and coaches over this 2.5-3 months. This isn't a regular season, right? This isn't a regular, hey, I'm going to go to the game and I'll be home after the game, or hey, hun, I'll see you guys after the game, you know, inside the arena. This is, they've packed up and they're going to be gone for a couple months.
And they're staying inside.
And they're staying inside. You're in this bubble. You know, you're not going to Disneyland. Disneyland is still closed. We all know that. So it's not like this is about fun. There is no fun here. This is all about business. This is about business of playing basketball, winning a championship, or getting as far as you can that your team allows you to. This is a business trip.
Or just going to the bubble, knowing you're going to get eliminated, getting your check, and then getting out of there.
For some, it will be that. I've always said this before, that there are some guys who don't value winning a championship. Like, they don't play the game to win a championship.
Or Kirk, they just know realistically they don't got a shot. Like, really, if you look at who's in the bubble right now, I mean, if one of maybe 4 or 5 teams don't win it, something drastic happened, right? Like, there's only so many teams that got a shot. Now, that doesn't mean you're not playing for something. I mean, I'm sure the Pelicans want to get in. It's incredibly important for them to get in, because they also want to get some of these young players to just get some playoff experience. If they got in, they lost in the first round, they played 5 games against the Lakers, that's a good season, right? Yep. But there's other teams out there that just know they have no shot.
They have no shot, but, you know, guys are going to show up. They're going to get their check. They get paid. And then they move on, right? There's some guys are doing it for different causes too, right? We've seen, I think Patty Mills said he's playing because he wants to donate his salaries for the Orlando.
That's right.
He wants to donate it to Black Lives Matter, right? So there's guys, and even Dwight Howard, you know, kudos to him, because I know we were on the fence. Was he going to play? Was he not going to play? And he's going to donate the salary that he earns in Orlando to his foundation, the Breathe Again Foundation. So there are guys who are doing it for other reasons now too. It's not just, hey, going there to win a championship. Guys realize, I can be going for a championship, but I could also do some good in my community with some of the money I can make in Orlando, right? So I'm seeing motivation from all aspects about playing in Orlando. So that's a good thing. But at some point, though, Alan, it is a sacrifice. It will not be the same. It will be different, okay?
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. It is a sacrifice.
It's a sacrifice.
If you said, hey, Alan, you want to go down the bubble for 3+ months? I mean, that is something to think about. That's not like just no problem. Yeah, I'm there. You know what I mean? Like, I know most media, we're going to have the opportunity to just do everything from our studio. But come on now, you're not asking somebody to, that's not a small ask. So obviously these players, and I know they're getting compensated for it. It's not like they're going there to volunteer. But it is a sacrifice.
Yeah, it's a sacrifice, but it's also a situation too that I've always said that I've heard my coach, one of my coaches a long time ago said, training camp, it's going to be uncomfortable, but it's your job to make the uncomfortable comfortable. It is your job to make the uncomfortable comfortable. That's what these players are going to do. They're going to figure out there are going to be some bonds that will be made here. There will be some tight-knit groups. You're going to learn a lot about the players that you're with, because you're going to be with them every day, right? This is also some bonding that you will always remember this time, right? 2020, right? The pandemic. Why are we playing basketball right now? and the guys who are around you getting you through this. Because however you feel, just remember the guy next to you probably feels the same way or even worse. So you got to lean on each other. That's part of the struggle of this is too. I mean, that's part of the struggle of this as well, Alan.
Kirk, so I want to, and I know we spent some time there, hit on the NBA, hit on LeBron, but I want to change gears for a quick second because I think we can relate this to LA very easily. So earlier today, the Baltimore Ravens announced capacity at M&T Bank Stadium. All right. So, by the way, I didn't even know this was a conversation. I didn't even know that. But the more I give it some thought, I could understand how this could be something that comes into play. So if I'm right on this, the NFL has given teams, they're going to determine how many fans, like capacity. And the reason why they're giving the teams this ability to do that is because every state is different. Every city is different. Obviously, what a local mayor is doing is different than maybe what the state governor has in mind. So there's a strategic reason why they're doing it. So the Baltimore Ravens are announcing that they will allow 14,000 fans into the games. Now, this is today. This is what they're saying, right? That could change in a month. 14,000 fans of 71,000. By the way, so that's about, you know, I think a little under an 80% cut of from the stadium's normal capacity, which isn't a surprise. I'm actually more surprised that they're even going to allow fans in. This is the question I have for, you know, those who are driving around right now or you're listening on the ESPN app. If something like this happened at SoFi Stadium, this brand new stadium, let's say the same amount, I think SoFi is around 70,000, right, Kirk?
Correct.
That's how many? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just use that same number. Let's say SoFi Stadium announced down the road that to watch a Rams or a Chargers game this year, they'll allow 14,000 fans to come. Plus, you'd have to sign a waiver. That waiver says if you get, you know, COVID-19 or anything like that, that's on you. You took that risk. You took that chance. Would you as a fan go to a Rams or a Charger game? If under those conditions, 14,000 fans, would you walk into SoFi Stadium if you had that opportunity? We'll take some of your guys' phone calls when we come back, 877-710-ESPN. And then, Kirk, I want to get your opinion on this, so we'll do that coming up next. Alan Sliwa and Kirk Morrison on 710-ESPN.